right. Last week we talked about our critical, contemptuous, condemning, condescending spirits. And in both cases, the bottom line is this. Rather than being negative, we should be positive. Rather than thinking of things to find fault with, we should think of things to praise. Rather than being preoccupied with that which is negative, we should be preoccupied with that which is positive. This week, we're talking about dealing with our anger, or the green monster that hides inside all of us. If you have a Bible, I'm going to invite you to open it to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5 is the first chapter in the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount begins with the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are eight attitudes that Jesus tells us all believers should have because they characterize Jesus and therefore should characterize us. Then he tells us if we have those eight attributes, then we will be widely and wildly influential. And he uses two metaphors to describe that. One of them is salt, and the other one is light. That if we are like Jesus, we will be salt in a world that is decaying and corrupting, and we will be like light in a world that's stumbling around in darkness. And so then, beginning in verse 17, Jesus introduces six examples of a concept that he wants us to understand. Verse 17 says this, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." And then in verse 20, he says, "I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." By this, he's trying to say that the law isn't set aside by grace. The law is fulfilled, number one, by Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf, fulfilling the just requirements of the law. But he's also trying to help his followers understand that the law still has a place in our lives. First, it convicts us of sin so that we know we need salvation. And secondly, it gives us a pattern upon which to build our lives. But Jesus raises the bar. He doesn't say, well, you know, the way it used to be, that's the way it is. He says, I even expect more of my followers than appears to be in the law. And so he says in a passage that we've read the last 2 weeks, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is even angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. And further, anyone who says to his brother, raka, which means idiot, is answerable. And anyone who says, you fool, will deserve the judgment fire of hell." And thus ends the reading of God's word. So now, tell me honestly, do you think that anger and murder are the same thing? I mean, really? When you get angry, do you really think you've murdered somebody? That's exactly right. In fact, throughout the history of the church, the well-intentioned have tried to help Jesus out here. Because it just doesn't seem right that Jesus would say, well, every time you get angry, it's like murdering somebody. And in fact, Erasmus, who was probably the greatest language scholar in the history of the church who lived during the Reformation, he tried to help Jesus out when he was constructing what was then the best Greek manuscript that he could put together and is in fact the basis of the King James translation today. He added the phrase, without cause. So angry without cause is bad, but angry is okay. Now, the problem with this is in addition to corrupting the text, and it's literally still in the King James Bible today, it also presumes that Jesus needs our help in communicating, but it also invalidates what Jesus said, because what person gets angry, it doesn't think I had a reason to get angry. So if you have a reason or you have an excuse, then it's okay. The Apostle John paraphrases Jesus' warning in this way. In 1 John chapter 3, he says, "This is the message we have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Anyone who hates his brother or sister is a murderer." So John is saying the same thing that Jesus is saying. If you're even angry or you have hate in your heart, then you've murdered them. And here's the problem. We try and shrink many of the commandments down. We try and make them more manageable or easy for us to apply, or not quite as threatening or demanding when we apply them. But the word that John uses here for anyone is a generic term, which means any person you know on any basis, which is the point of the parable of the Good Samaritan. Who is my neighbor? Everybody is my neighbor, and anyone to whom I express anger, I am murdering. Now, not all anger is bad or prohibited. In fact, there is such a thing as righteous indignation. This is the premise of every single episode of the old Incredible Hulk show. You know, some mafioso would do some heinous crime, and Lou Ferrigno, or let's see, Bill Bixby would be righteously indignant. He would turn into Lou Ferrigno, and he would go out and win the day for good and righteousness. And Jesus sure seemed to be angry at the Pharisees, didn't he? And he was clearly angry when he kicked the profiteers out of the temple, but there's a distinction. We get angry at the sinner. Jesus was angry at the sin. And this, by the way, is what the Bible basically would say is the distinction between selfish anger and righteous anger, is getting mad at the sin and how it affects other people rather than getting angry at the sinner. Now, rather than adding up all of the various situations or the few situations in which we might actually experience righteous indignation, let me assure you that I read as both a book and several things on the internet this week, and they seem to average out that 90% of the times in which we get angry, it's selfish. Somebody has hurt our feelings. Somebody has left hair in the sink one too many times. Somebody has left that garage door open all night long with the light on. Somebody's forgotten to put the toilet seat down again. Or somebody said something that's right, but we don't like the way they say it, and so the green monster erupts inside, and we become Lou Ferrigno. Compare this with Jesus, who never, ever got angry at any of the things that people hurled at him, either insults or betrayal or torture or crucifixion. He was angry when he saw pain and injustice inflicted on others. Unfortunately, our anger is primarily motivated by petty selfishness that we haven't gotten our way. I read an article that I think I shared this with you once before. I don't want to say I love this because it's really sad, but it's an interesting story. So Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 14 years ago, a 61-year-old man was arrested in the stabbing death of his wife. He told a policeman he was incensed at the way she placed food in the refrigerator. Joseph Fallett was arrested at his home for the slaying of his 50-year-old wife, Florine, who the police said had been stabbed 219 times. I don't even know how you count that. Said patrolman John Samoviak, he said she would stack the refrigerator full of vegetables, hiding the milk, and he wasn't going to take it anymore. And who can blame him? Here's the deal. We would never conceive of ourselves as stabbing our spouse 219 times, at least physically. But the painful reality is, most of us have stabbed our spouse or others 219 times emotionally or psychologically or in some other way. And this is what Jesus is trying to get us to understand. It's the same thing. Physical injury might hurt more physically, but emotionally being stabbed can leave scars oftentimes a whole lot longer than a physical injury can. The last 2 weeks I've needed to confess that I struggle with controlling my tongue. This just happens to be an area that I don't struggle with is anger, and so we each have our own crosses to bear and burdens that we deal with. I very seldom get angry, and when I do, I turn kind of this really pale shade of green, but it can still happen to me. As I was thinking of this, I was thinking of the time that one of my kids was sick and they didn't understand that the red dye children's Tylenol that I'd just given them, that they throw it up on the carpet, that it's going to permanently stain the carpet. It really made me mad. A couple years later, I remember one of my children wet their bed 3 times in the same night. And I knew that they weren't doing it on purpose, but it still made me angry that I had to get up 3 times in the middle of the night and change their bed for them. All of us struggle with anger. Sometime, some way, and all of us wrestle with having to either repress it or express it, and the way we do it determines the impact that we have on other people's lives. Anger comes unbidden out of all of us because it is evoked within us, regardless of who we are. But fortunately, some of us may not have to struggle with it as much as others, but here's the sad reality. Most of us save our anger for who? People who are closest to us, the people in our family, the people we live with, who either A, we think we can get away with it, or we think that they will forgive us later on. Philip Morley, in his book, Seasons in a Man's Life, says, "We put on a good show at the office and in our social gatherings, but how you are behind the closed doors of your home is how you really are. At the end of a long, hard day at the office, when you pull up to the drawbridge of your own private castle, your family gets to live with the real you." Anger destroys the quality of our personal lives, our marriages, even our health. Angry words are like irretrievable arrows released from an archer's bow. And once released, traveling through the air towards their target, they cannot be withdrawn. Their damage cannot be undone. And like the arrows of an archer, our angry words pierce like a jagged blade, ripping at the heart of their target. Now, the people who are the ones who struggle with expressing their anger don't see it that way. And the painful reality is that oftentimes the people who experience the anger, sometimes physical expressions of the anger, see it very much that way. And it isn't just individuals who are struggling with anger in America at an all-time rate. In fact, I read some statistics from the FBI. This wasn't some sociological study. These are government FBI statistics. 65% of married couples in America say that they've had at least one incident of physical abuse in their marriage, which means there's the possibility that at least one person in this room this morning has either given or received physical abuse in their marriage. 25% of physical abuse involves incidents of serious beating, and hospitals report that more than 1 million incidents in the emergency room of hospitals in our country have to do with domestic violence. 25% of homicides in the U.S., one-fourth of all homicides involve killing of a spouse. 10 million kids are currently suffering from physical abuse by either one or both of their parents, and that statistic only covers the ones that are being reported. So more than 10 million children in America today are being abused. And the newest category and the biggest growth area for physical abuse in our culture is directed towards the elderly. It's too early to get firm statistics on this, but it's estimated between 2 to 3 million older adults every year are being abused by their adult children who get frustrated with their parents. And finally, the homicide rate in America is 5 times higher than the second worst country in the world. So you take the second worst country and you multiply it by 5, and that's the United States, which, by the way, prides itself on being peaceful and loving and accepting, and yet we are by far and away the most violent culture in America. And these statistics, as staggering as they are, only deal with physical abuse. It doesn't deal with the verbal abuse and the emotional abuse and the name-calling and the threats and the yelling and screaming that go on when we express our anger. We're not handling anger well in America. And apparently that filters into people in the church as well. Let me give you just 2 examples of what the Bible has to say about this. One of these passages we looked at last week, I'm going to read you verse 29 and 31. "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only such as is helpful in building others up." Angry expressions are normally not helpful in building other people up. "Get rid of all bitterness, gossip, and slander, along with every kind of meanness and malice and anger." In Colossians chapter 3, Paul says, "You must rid yourself of all such things as these: anger, rage," which is another form of anger, "malice, slander, and filthy language." And this is just literally the tip of the iceberg between the Old Testament and the New Testament, in which God expresses through human beings, anger is not okay. So this morning, let's talk about the 3 most common unhealthy ways in which we express or handle our anger. The first, we inappropriately express it, which means we vent our anger. Over the past 40 years, various forms of pop psychology has told us, well, we need to get better at expressing our feelings. We need to get better at expressing our anger. By bottling it up, it causes problems, so you need to get it out there. And so an increasing number of Americans, whether they've heard this report or not, have decided, great, I'm going to express my anger. Read a story a few years ago about a guy who was driving home from church with his children in the back seat, leisurely along a thoroughfare with beautifully lined trees, and there's a car just a little bit in front of him, and a Jaguar comes speeding up beside them, whips in between the two of them, clips the front end of his car, and he goes up against the curb and over the curb, and the Jaguar keeps driving on. So angry, he hits the accelerator pedal. He goes chasing after the Jaguar. They get to a turnoff and a stop, and he pulls up beside him, and they're sitting in the car, in the passenger side with the window rolled down, was a fairly sophisticated looking woman, and he cusses her up and down through the window, and he spits at her out of his window, and then the Jaguar pulls away, and he says, "Then for the first time, I looked in the rearview mirror and saw my children's faces, with their eyes wide and their mouths open, and I thought to myself, what beast has taken control of their father, and will this image permanently be in my children's minds to remind them of this moment in all the years to come?" Now, part of the sad reality is that when we get angry and we vent our anger, we're not really worried about anybody else. We just think it'll make us feel better. We think, well, if I express this, then I'm not bottling up and I'll feel a whole lot better. Who cares how it affects anybody else? My high school track coach was a man we nicknamed the Bear, and not because he was warm and cuddly. He had a gruff exterior. He had a deep, growling voice. He was an irritable personality. He never looked happy. He kind of stomped around inflicting his unhappiness on other people. He was a good track coach, but he wasn't a very happy human being. So at our 20-year high school reunion, he comes in drunk. And he sits down at a table with me and a few other people, and eventually people wander off, and he says to me, "So Matthew, you always spoke your mind. Do you know why people called me the Bear?" Well, yeah, but do you want me to tell you the truth, or do you want me to tap dance around it a little bit for you? And he said, "No, I want the truth." I said, "Well, it's partially because you have a gruff exterior, but it's primarily because you are an angry person who inflicted your anger on other people." So he thinks about it for a second, and he says, "You know, the saddest part of that is this. It not only destroyed my marriage, it has estranged me from my only child, my son, and every time I do it, I feel like I'm out of control and not myself. The worst part of it is I never end up feeling better. I always feel worse. I always feel guilty afterwards. I always feel depressed afterwards. Or I end up just feeling more angry afterwards, and it never solves what's going on." And then he just kind of stops. And then he says, "Well, I don't want to talk about this anymore," and then he gets up and leaves. Well, you know, what's interesting about this is profound self-awareness as to what's actually going on and the cost, either that or he'd been to counseling. But there didn't seem to be any commiserate commitment to dealing with it. And this is what you will discover in most people that are rageaholics or people that rationalize rage, is that I had just cause for being this way. I wouldn't have reacted this way if you hadn't done this. If these circumstances weren't the case, then I wouldn't be like this. I'm redheaded, I have Irish descent, whatever it is, I've got a good excuse and I'm going to use it. I don't need to read this to you. There's all kinds of psychological research that demonstrates that expressing anger only intensifies it. If you're a loving person and you express love, you become more loving. If you're a kind person and you demonstrate acts of kindness, you become a kinder person. If you're an angry person and you vent your anger, you become an even angrier person and you feel it more. And to make matters worse, vented anger is like a weed. Not only does it grow wildly and pervasively and take over other things, it also chokes out the more desirable plants that should be there. In fact, the fruits of the Spirit, which ones of these are compatible with anger? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, I suppose it's possible to be good and faithful, but seven of the nine are totally incompatible with anger and expressions of anger and the effects of anger. This should be really sobering for us as believers, that this is not what God calls us to. Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise person keeps himself under control." Second, so not only do we express our anger inappropriately and vent, secondly, we displace our anger, which means that we still vent, only we find somebody else to vent it on, not the person or the thing that we're frustrated at, but something else. A husband who can't deal with the anger he feels towards his boss in an appropriate way might come home and inflict it on his wife. Or a wife who can't deal with the anger she feels towards her husband in a constructive way might inflict it upon the children. And the older child might inflict it on the younger child, and the younger child might inflict it on the family dog. And psychologists tell us that the incredible rise in emotional and physical abuse in the United States is primarily related to the displacement of anger. I played Little League Baseball for 2 years. I don't think there was a worse guy in the league than me. In fact, the only reason I ever got in a game is because my dad was the coach and he felt he had to play me. But the best guy on our team was a guy named Randy Bear. And do you remember Randy? He was bigger than the rest of us. He was twice as good as the rest of us. The only reason we ever won any games or even were in losing games is because of Randy. And his mother, to this day, I still think is the most angry person I've ever known personally. She was unhappy at work. She was unhappy in her marriage. She was unhappy in her body. She just oozed anger everywhere she went. You couldn't even say hi to her without feeling like you were getting an angry response back. And during every game, she would stand at the fence with her fingers gripping the wire, yelling from beginning to end, not at anybody else, just at her son, who was outperforming everybody else on the field, and she was telling him either on offense or defense he couldn't do a single thing right. And I remember at the tender age of 8 or 9 thinking to myself, she's got to be mad at something else. She can't be mad at him because he's the only one out there who's really, really good. The sad reality is we get angry at something else and we vent it on things or on people who don't deserve it, whether we should be venting on anybody whatsoever. And there's different ways this plays out. You know, some people let it out in a slow leak, kind of like this general grumpiness. Angry people are no fun to be around. They're grumpy and unpleasant and have a negative attitude towards life and will bite your head off. Some people camouflage it through cynicism, you know, being witty and negative. Some people camouflage it through sarcasm, thinking that they're being funny. But in all cases, this low-grade sense of displaced anger, the worst form of it is in a passive-aggressive approach to difficulties. Number three, not only do we vent our anger, not only do we displace our anger, but number three, we suppress our anger, which, by the way, is very popular in Christian circles. I know that expressing my anger unhelpfully is a sin, so what do I do with it? I'll just pretend I don't have any anger. And the spiritual solution is to just kind of sit on it and say, well, you know, I can't express it, so I have to sit on it. So we don't deal with it in a healthy manner whatsoever. Tony Campolo says this, "Suppression is a coping mechanism often used by religious people who try to pretend they're not bothered by the insults and injuries and crises of life. We religious types often pretend we're bigger and more powerful than we really are. We try to convince others that we've risen above the need to become angry when we've been wronged. It may be all right to convince others, but we must not deceive ourselves." We are angered and we do want vengeance, but we suppress our anger and we keep secret our ugly urge to seek vengeance. We must recognize that what we suppress in our consciousness is ultimately driven underground in our subconsciousness, where it still haunts us and can explode at any time. And by the way, I was reading something that says that psychologists believe that one of the most important causes for depression in human beings is repressed or suppressed anger. When we suppress, rather than exploding on other people, we implode within ourselves. And it's the cause of a good amount of depression in American culture today. In addition, heart attacks and strokes and ulcers, and somebody was saying they think it's related to the onset of certain kinds of cancer. We all understand that if you sit on a ticking time bomb, it's going to have physical and emotional consequences. So, if venting inappropriately is not the solution, if suppressing it is not the solution, if displacing it is not the solution, what is the solution? We're going to talk about this next time. But I want to give you some homework. So this is in the back of your bulletin at the very bottom. And I'm going to suggest that you do this with somebody who you live with today. Ask them to process you with yourself. So the general question is, if inappropriate expressions of anger are wrong, what are more appropriate expressions? So just talk about this generally. What are inappropriate expressions and what are appropriate expressions? Number two, getting more personal with regard to yourself, not them, yourself, and the things that anger you, what would be a more healthy and helpful way for you to express your anger? Now, when you share with the other person, you need to give them some feedback, but don't go with, well, when you do this, go with, well, when I'm feeling this way or I'm struggling with this, help me resolve what would be a healthier way to process this with you. And then third, if anger represents a truth, if you got to be angry at something, so what is it you're angry at? What are you feeling? Whether it's right or wrong doesn't matter. Whether it's about some injustice or just self-pity in your life, how can you express this truth in love? How can you take what it is that you're feeling that's causing anger and figure out a way to express it or share it or dialogue about it in a healthy, loving way rather than in a destructive, unhealthy way? Please do this today. Will you join me in prayer? Heavenly Father, we all get our feelings hurt. We all feel misused and abused. We all feel life is unfair. We all feel that things should be different than they are. These and 100 other things, often not significant, cause us to be angry at other people or angry at our circumstances, and we don't always handle our anger well. Father, help us to understand what causes us to be angry. Help us to understand how we inflict our anger on others or inflict it on ourselves, and help us understand how we might better handle it and therefore be more like Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.